Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Happy Tuesday, everybody. We've got some great guests and conversations this morning. In just a minute, the new governor of Connecticut, Dan Malloy. He's got a budget deficit, too, but he's kind of positioning himself as the not Scott Walker and not Chris Christie. Later on this International Women's Day, we'll talk about what Newsweek calls the Hillary Doctrine, how the Secretary of State is making women's rights a central part of U.S. foreign policy. We've got CBS political analyst Jeff Greenfield with his book of alternative histories, like the provocative notion of what if the U.S. had assassinated Ayatollah Khomeini, or if somebody had, rather than let him come to power in Iran way back when. And we'll continue our series on the national science test questions that American kids can't answer with actual test questions. Are you smarter than a 4th, 8th, or 12th grader? And now we will meet the new governor of Connecticut, Dan Malloy, the state's first Democratic governor in 20 years. Like every governor this year, just about, Malloy has a serious budget gap to close, $3.2 billion, a whopping 20% of the state budget. Most of that would come from spending cuts, including givebacks from state employees. But unlike some, he is not treating state employee unions as public enemy number one, and he is proposing to raise some taxes, part of an overall approach that also includes no borrowing to cover operating expenses and shoring up the state's pension fund. Let's find out more. Governor Malloy, so nice of you to join us. Welcome to WNYC.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on with you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Our station covers the tri-state area, as I think you know, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. You're the only governor of the three proposing to raise any taxes. Why did you decide that should be part of the mix?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. Number one, I have a bigger problem than other states, and other states have dealt with this with their own problems last year to some extent.
You have a bigger problem than New Jersey?
On a per capita basis, yes.
Go ahead.
And by the way, I have no intention of shifting the burden to local taxpayers, property taxpayers. So, you know, I have said that we're going to continue to distribute monies to local communities at the same rate that we have been in the past, which is, in essence, saying I'm not going to shift the burden. So we're taking an approach in Connecticut that has the state settling the state's problem, not passing it to local communities. We're not going to borrow money to operate for operating expenses. We're going to make our pension payments, which we haven't for a couple of years, so that's $877 million. We're going to fill some of the holes that otherwise would have occurred in the budget because of the lapse of stimulus dollars. And you know, we would not be Connecticut if we cut $3.3 billion out of our operating expenses. We would have no safety net, in essence.
If I understand the facts correctly, it's not just income tax hikes on the wealthiest, like they're debating in New York. It's a mix of income and sales taxes, plus alcohol and gasoline tax hikes and tax on things like haircuts for the first time. I'll just get through the question.
Sure.
And the original price of an item, even if you buy it at a sales price, I read, if that's all accurate, isn't that some regressive taxation?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, you're wrong about the sales price. We would reinstate what was our policy up until 1998. If you use a coupon, you get the discount that the discounter gives you, but you pay the tax on the full price. And that was law in Connecticut until 1998. But you wouldn't pay for a sales price item. So there's a difference between
just with coupons.
Right, just
okay.
With coupons. That's number one. Number two, what we do in this budget, and you haven't mentioned it yet, is we actually join the states with an earned income tax credit, a robust 30% of the federal target or the federal number. So in essence, we're saying to families of four with incomes of $42,000 or less, we're going to give you money as long as you have a job. And let's be very clear, that is a form of compensation for a tax system that is somewhat more regressive. But what we're trying to get to is having a much more broad basis of taxation. We raised taxes on the wealthy 19 months ago, and we would do that again, but to a lesser extent than other groups. But on a two-budget look, the wealthiest citizens would have seen their taxes go up very substantially, just less in this step as opposed to the first.
In New York and New Jersey, the governors say if they raise taxes on the wealthy, they will just flee across state lines because they can. You're not afraid they'll flee Connecticut?
Well, what I've been very clear about is that we will maintain a substantial competitive advantage against our neighboring states of Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New York, and just a few miles further from our borders, New Jersey. So in New York, where your top rate would be 8.75%, our top rate would be 6.7%.
Do you think that Governors Christie and Cuomo are wrong on that argument when it comes to their states?
I think I don't want to give them advice, I to tell you the truth, particularly advice that might limit my advantage. So why would I do that?
Governor Dan Malloy of Connecticut, my guest on WNYC. You are also proposing givebacks from state employees. How would they get hit?
In any number of ways. That's to be negotiated. What I've said is we have a target of $1 billion per year. We do two-year budgeting, biennium budget. So $1 billion per year is what we need to negotiate. We've cut about $800 million out of our spending plan, and we would raise revenue of approximately $1.5 billion on a broad basis.
What do you think of the general argument that public employee benefits are just out of step with the times, especially defined benefit pensions and health insurance with low employee contributions or no employee contributions, which private sector workers generally don't get anymore?
Well, I mean, that's a big bite because you've just raised a whole bunch of issues, right? I'm not against defined benefit plans if they're properly funded and contributed to by the employee group. The problem for state governments is that they didn't properly fund defined benefit plans, and they did not require the employee group to contribute sufficiently so that the system was sustainable on either end, the contributions from the employees or the contributions from the state. But, you know, I was a trustee of a pension plan that was well-funded and properly funded both by employees and government, and it ran well. So defined benefit plans in and of themselves should not be considered the enemy. They can work, but they require sacrifice. They require sacrifice by the state or municipal entity, making sure it pays its money, and by employees who, if they want better benefits, have to contribute more and more and more money.
Are we heading, though, toward a society where the defined benefit pension is only an artifact of the public sector, and is that okay?
Well, I would disagree that that's the proper policy. See, I want to go back to this. If you want to maintain some of the old rules of how defined benefit pensions work, where employees don't contribute enough and the government doesn't or the employer doesn't contribute enough, or to go back to the way that many corporations did, they only invested in themselves, so when there was a downturn, they got wiped out. I mean, that's not a good system. So I'm not arguing that we maintain the status quo, but I'm also pointing out that if you changed your behaviors, defined benefit plans work perfectly well. I mean, in the insurance world, they're called annuities. And no one is saying that insurance companies should not be allowed to sell annuities anymore, are they?
Not that I know of.
You get my point.
Governor Dan Malloy, the new governor of Connecticut, my guest on WNYC. What do you think of the national political climate that includes vilification of state employee unions? You've said being bombastic about this for the sake of being bombastic has just never been my take on the world. And people have said you're trying to be the anti-Chris Christie.
Well, every governor has the right to be the governor of their state, right? And to exhibit their own personal style. That would not work for me. I'm rather invested in developing a consensus. One of the reasons that I'm doing, 17 town hall meetings across the state and standing by the budget and explaining it to people who are rightfully angry. I mean, I didn't create the problem, by the way. I just got elected. I'm just trying to solve the problem. One of the reasons I'm doing that is the people of Connecticut need to know that they have a governor who's invested in turning Connecticut around. And yes, this is strong medicine that has to be taken very shortly after I was elected governor. But this budget represents the best opportunity for Connecticut to become a growth state again. We need to be transparent in our budgeting. We need to honor our commitments and fund our pensions. We need to stop borrowing money to cover operating expenses. We need to establish what our means are and live within them. All of that gets done in this budget.
Did you see that Christie's negatives are way up in New Jersey in a new poll today from 30% last time to 40%, 46% now? Are you willing to comment on that?
I those are big numbers. Every governor has a different approach, and I don't want to battle with everybody else's governor. I live in my state. He's got his style. He's doing what he's doing. It suffices to say that I'm going in a very different direction, and ultimately it will be a look backwards that decides who is right, not projecting forward.
You were the mayor of Stamford for 14 years and an assistant DA in Brooklyn before that. Do you think having been mayor of a diverse city with urban issues gives you this different starting point as governor?
I do. I mean, I do. I think having to balance budgets year after year after year, having to adjust one's priorities in connection with the ability of people to pay their property taxes, and creating efficiencies over a long period of time, understanding that government can create efficiencies. You can get higher levels of service from a smaller workforce, but it takes time to do that, I think are all built into my assumptions about this budget and Connecticut's future at this point.
Why do you think in the elections last fall, as much of the country was swinging so Republican, Connecticut was unusual or maybe even unique, I don't know, in holding on to all its Democratic House seats and electing you the first Democratic governor in 20 years? Why is Connecticut so blue?
I only won this by a few votes. It was no landslide. I think each of those races was an independent standalone race. Congressman Murphy, who was thought to be in trouble, and Congressman Himes, who was thought to be in trouble, and my own race were standalone. I think we're all moderate Democrats. I think that we represented options. I think we stood by our guns. We told the truth, and we were able to. Eke out victories, and I think we are unique. I think we're the only state to remain all Democrat in its representation in Washington, and to pick up a governor's seat, which we hadn't had for 20 years. I think we are unique, and I think part of it is each of the personalities involved on either side of the race, Republican or Democrat, that allowed us to win.
One question about health reform, if I might. Have you costed out the impact on Connecticut of the health reform laws passed by Congress and signed by the president once it's fully enacted? And how do you foresee the impact on the state in general?
I don't believe we have a full picture of that, and I think it's impossible to get a full picture because we're not sure yet how much flexibility we'll have. The president has called for an amendment that would give us more flexibility in the design of that system starting in 2014 as opposed to picking up the flexibility in 2017. So I don't think anybody knows what the cost is. Suffice it to say that it's a substantial cost. It'll drive government growth and probably eat up every additional dollar that governments bring in a more robust economy. Suffices to say, however, that I think it's the right thing. We need to make sure that people have access to health care, particularly early in the illness, so that we can prevent illnesses from actually draining late stage drains of conditions that could have been treated much earlier.
So how will you define success at the end of 4 years?
I'm going to define success in the next few months. I got to get a budget done, and I want the budget to look like what I'm proposing, not something else. And you know, success in the short run will be that I convince the legislature to go with a plan the likes of which I'm suggesting, and we get it done in the session on time. In the long run, to answer your question now specifically, I want to see Connecticut healthier, stronger, a more transparent government, more efficient government, a smaller workforce delivering a higher level of services, and a government that is incorporating all of the federal mandates with respect to the availability of health care.
The brand new governor of Connecticut, Dan Malloy. Let's see, you're doing a town hall in Hartford today, is that right?
No, town hall tonight is in Waterbury, and then I'm going to be in Norwich tomorrow night. I'm doing 17 of those. I've done three.
Wow.
By the end of the week, I will have done five, and they just continue right through April.
Any last thing you want to say? Convince Westchester rich people to move across the border, anything at all?
Well, I don't know what they're waiting for.
So we will leave it there, and we look forward to talking to you many times, Governor.
See you later. Take care.
Thank you very much. Governor Dan Malloy, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.